It's time for another episode of Just a Bit Outside with your hosts, Stark and Massaro.
Way back, Blue Jays win it! Touch the ball, Joe! Brett Favre! Touchdown, Green Bay! Bless you, boys! What a game!
We are live. It's time for another amazing episode of Just a Bit Outside. We have lots of great sports to discuss, including Vlad Jr. goes off, Jordan is back on top, the NBA playoffs tip off, the NHL Western Conference is getting tight, and a perfect game shutdown. But first, Mike, how was your week?
Well, I think I've professed over our episodes, I love football. So this past weekend, I watched the, I guess, relaunch. I don't know if you want to call it relaunch or the birth of the USFL. So this league existed back in the 80s, predominantly as a spring ball option, and it's come back. So this weekend they kicked off. They're doing their season, 10-week season, eight teams all playing in Birmingham, Alabama.
Indoor facility, all right? Like in an arena?
In a stadium, outdoor stadium. Yeah. Okay. There's a couple stadiums there I think they're using for the duration of this. But I think only two games were on television here in Canada, at least that I could find. So caught a bit of the Saturday night game, Sunday afternoon. They said they had 3 million viewers across Fox and NBC and streaming services over the weekend. Saturday night had a decent crowd. You know, it wasn't that bad. A lot of different camera angles. Drone footage, not really my thing.
I saw the drone footage on the kickoff. I thought that was so cool. The kicker obviously runs up, kicks the ball, and the drone's behind him and follows the ball all the way till it's caught by the receiver. I thought that was actually pretty cool, or if it was through the field goal, I guess. I thought that was something different. And you find with some of these new leagues that are trying to pop up, no matter what sport it is, sometimes the main leagues end up stealing bits and pieces from those other leagues. I was wondering if maybe that was it, but the actual quality of the game, what was it like?
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, the problem is you don't know a lot of these guys. Like some of them you recognize from college and a couple have had games here and there, but for the most part, you know, you need to really educate yourself at who these players are. The drone stuff was fine in certain situations when the play's happening, like when there's a handoff or something. I don't really want to see the drone. I want to see the scope of the field. But to your point, I mean, the first go-around of the XFL, they introduced a lot of different camera angles, and I think the umpire cam or something like that. And then the NFL eventually adopted some of those. So you're right. We'll see what happens. But, you know, these guys got the run here now for this season until the XFL, launched by The Rock, comes back next year. So, I mean, look, for a football fan, it gives you a bit of your fix, but I'm not going to be going out buying any merchandise, let's just say.
No,
that.
I was just about to ask, who's our USFL team then? Do we have one?
I don't think we have one. Let's see how things go. We'll just be fans of the league. We'll wear the league crest hat like Rob Lowe did.
Yeah, that's right. I like that look. Well, you know what? The end of all our shows, we always say, hey, we love the feedback. Give us the feedback. Well, I got tons of feedback from last week's episode when I talked about my Tooth Fairy story or lack thereof Tooth Fairy and how many people this has actually happened to. I heard one story. A guy told me he woke up in a cold sweat at like 3:30 in the morning. I was like, oh my God, the Tooth Fairy. I gotta go get that tooth. So I'm not the only one. My wife and I aren't the only one. However, I unfortunately have to give you a quick update because the Tooth Fairy forgot to come for a second time this week. Yep. My son lost his other front tooth. Same situation. I thought my wife took it. She thought I took it. Forgot again. Woke up in the morning. He's like, hey, Tooth Fairy never came again. So back to back, we're 0 for 2 on this one. But hey, you know what? That's why you have a second kid. So you can learn from your mistakes from the first one to get it right with the second.
Fair enough. Hopefully the Easter Bunny wasn't delayed as well.
No, Easter Bunny was there. All was good with that one.
There you go.
That was fun. But I actually, speaking of Easter, I went golfing. I've gone golfing twice since we last spoke, Mike. Played two rounds, cold, windy conditions. The first round was a real struggle. Around the greens, I had no touch. no chipping, no putting, couldn't really figure it out, but didn't really matter. I mean, the greens were pretty bumpy at this time of year here in Ontario. I managed to birdie 17 and 18 though. You know, that's always the case. Makes you say, oh, I figured something out. Got to come back again. So went back again. Second round, I shot a 1-over-36 on the front, but then proceeded to bogey the next five holes. So slipping a little bit, but I still held it together. It was my first round under 80 on the new golf season. So I'm happy about that. I'm moving in the right direction. I've set some golf goals this year, and I'm hopefully going to be able to achieve some of those.
Yeah, the conditions right now, I mean, you can't really, you know, it is what it is. We might be getting snow earlier this week, apparently, so that's always great.
I'm seeing some pictures already today from snow in Ontario. I'm not liking it.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, by next week we start to get some sunnier skies and some warmer temps, and the grass responds accordingly, and then I will get out there.
Yeah, well, I'm full in now. Now that I play two, I don't care what the conditions are. I'm just gonna keep going and power through in it. But then Sunday night after the round, breaking 80 again, as mentioned, I took my boys to the Maple Leafs game Sunday night against the Islanders. It was my youngest first Leafs game ever, but he's an Oilers fan. So he demanded that he wear his Oilers hoodie under his Maple Leafs jersey. No arguing with that one. Just say yes and move on with your life. It's not worth arguing with him because he's always going to win. But we were on the train down to the game. My phone started buzzing with an update that Austin Matthews would be out for the game because of some sort of injury the night before. The boys were pretty bummed since he's their favorite player on the team. But I'm sure this happens all the time in lots of different sports with star players sitting out, especially in the NBA with load management. It just really sucked that Matthews wasn't playing.
I remember as a kid going to a couple Leaf games, and I like Potman when I was younger, and I was, you know, fortunate to go to a few games as a kid. And I think there was two or three games where he didn't play. The one game he was supposed to play, I think, I can't remember, but Damian Rhodes. I remember watching him at Maple Leaf Gardens.
Felix the Cat, great nickname, great helmet. One of the all-time great helmets with the cat ears. But, you know, goalies probably happens a lot more too, right, when they're sitting out. They love the game still. They ate everything in sight. I mean, just snack monsters. And MLSE knows that there are dads and grandpas that can't say no to these kids, and they just jack up the price of popcorn and Skittles. Costs a fortune, but definitely worth it for them to see live hockey. I mean, my youngest's eyes were wide open, like, holy smokes, this is way better than going to watch my older brother play down the street. Now, I know I'm famous for fan observations when I go to games. Fans were fine. Couple Islander fans being crazy. Some drunk ones around us. You know, there's a drunk lady high-fiving and hugging my son when the Leafs scored. A little bit weird, but let that one slide. The only observation I had, Mike, was that warm-up music sucks nowadays. What happened to AC/DC, Van Halen, and the Tragically Hip? I guess I'm just an old guy now that doesn't like the younger music. Still, it doesn't sound like pump-up music when these guys are kind of skating around. It was brutal. It's just new generation music. It's just not for me. I was waiting for a good tune to get these guys going, but nothing. Couldn't stand it. What's your favorite pump-up song, warm-up song that you like to listen to?
I think one that was always played in pretty much in every NFL stadium I went to in either warm-ups or before kickoff, Hell's Bells.
Yes. Where
the bells tolling and, you know, that little interlude. But the point of the warm-up music is to warm the players up, Stark, not you. They couldn't care what you
fans,
think.
Get the fans going a little bit,
the fans
too.
Will get going. Okay.
What about this one? Because then I started thinking, you're a UFC fighter or a professional boxer, Mike. What's your walkout song? Have you ever thought about that and thought, okay, I'm walking out. You know, there's been all the great entrances. It's WWE. They probably have their great entrances as well. What's the song that when they say, now come to the ring, Mike, the Crusher, Mazzaro, what song are we hearing?
I don't know if I could pick one off the top of my head.
Thunderstruck. Thunderstruck.
No. That's
Mike,
overused.
The Thunder Mazzaro.
The one I will say that I do really like, but it belongs to Mr. CM Punk, The Cult of Personality. Living Color. That's a hell of an entrance song that gets the people going. Not mine. I'd probably pick something country.
The Smash Glass of Steve Austin. That's pretty good, right?
And iconic.
I want to say Mike Tyson. Did Mike Tyson used to just come out to silence? Was he the guy that did that?
Just I'm quiet. Not sure.
He'd have the robe on and hood. Another great entrance as well. So think about it, Mike. You can get back to us next week with your walkout music. And anyone else listening out there, let us know what your favorite walkout music is. I'm very intrigued by that type of stuff. But hey, stick around. We got our T5 coming up right after this break. Let's start the show with showing some respect to the top team in the AL East. The Toronto Blue Jays will be our T1. The Jays are 6-4 to start the year, but could easily be 9-1 with the explosive offensive power they have shown this year, including last Wednesday when Vlad Guerrero Jr. hit 3 home runs at Yankee Stadium to help the Jays pass Gerrit Cole and the Yankees. Mike, from what you have seen so far, is Vladdy about to have a massive season?
Absolutely. What he did, Yankee Stadium is a hitter's friendly park, but still, to do what he did, 3 home runs and a double in that game. Let's not forget that. Yeah. He had 4 hits. He's unbelievable. And I know there's some questions, some concern. You know, Teoscar goes down on the 10-day DL. And the lineup around him, how he's going to start seeing pitches. But as good as Vladdy's been, we got to give credit to Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Because, right. I mean, he had a great game Sunday against Oakland. But in Teoscar's absence, he's hitting right before Vladdy. And he's done a hell of a job filling in. And, you know, credit to the Jays. The more series you win, you're going to have a much better record when all is said and done. They split 2 in the Bronx, take 2 of 3 from the A's, and haven't lost a series to start the season, and good first 10 games.
Yeah, you don't want a bad start to the season because then you're just playing catch up the rest of the way. You always got to think about winning series, obviously, yes, but winning the month. If you can win each month and get yourself, call it 15 wins a month, 14, 15 wins a month, you're going to get past that 90 win total, which is going to get you in the playoffs this year, especially with the expanded playoffs. But back to Vladdy, I mean, he's playing with a sense of excitement every game, and you can see it in the dugout and when they're playing, but he's always realizing that he needs to prove himself. He needs to be better than what he was the previous year, and you can see that he's starting to turn the corner as a professional athlete. He needs to help his team win. I mean, after hitting that home run early in the game against the Yankees last Wednesday, he was trying to make that catch at first base when the runner stepped right on his hand and he cut him pretty bad. I mean, that blood was gushing out. And let's remember, these baseball players nowadays, they're still wearing metal spikes. So it's like a big knife on the bottom of your feet, and he crunched right down on his finger. I thought he would leave the game, have some stitches, maybe sit out the next game. That's what was going through my mind when he was going back to the dugout. But as soon as he got in there, he said, "Hey, tape me up. I'm going back out there. It's early in the game. My team still needs me. That showed the entire team that he's here to win. And then he proceeded to hit the 2 more home runs and the double that you mentioned. After the double, Gerrit Cole, arguably one of the top 5 pitchers in the game, just tipped his hat to him and said, "Hey, I can't get this guy out tonight. He is just too good." And as you remember, Vlad Guerrero Sr. was obviously a Hall of Fame baseball player, a great player, one of the best in the game that we have ever seen. But he never won a World Series, and he did not have much playoff success. You know that Junior knows this, and he's thinking, this is our window that we're in right now. We have a great group of guys, and I have a chance to lead this team. And winning ball games, whether it's in April, August, September, or hopefully October, matters. And that's why he had to play, and I think it was a very big positive for him to come back in that game and show the team that he's here to win.
Yeah, agreed. I was kind of thinking the same thing when I saw it and saw the blood, and there was, you know, a fair amount of blood. And I said, "No, well, that might be his night," but no, he toughed it out, stay in the game, and you know, that's the type of competitor he has. But on his dad, that Vlad Sr., he could hit anything from head to foot. One of the best hitters ever.
Right off the dirt. Could have been a great cricket player too, probably. But looking at the Jays so far, I know it's early, 10 games in, but you know, we're going to evaluate this team the entire year. The offense I'm liking right now, A+. I think I can only think of one game where they didn't really have the bats going. We got shut out. Defense, B+. Slowly starting to show the athleticism that the team has and how they can help their pitchers, especially those ground ball pitchers. Chapman and Bichette, they've been a wall on the left side. And even Biggio, as you mentioned, out there in right field, making a couple diving catches. He's only played, I think, less than 40 games in right field, but that's why you keep him around. Hernandez is out. Throw him in there. You need him at second base? Great. You need him to play first base to give Vladdy a day off? Fine. But you need those utility guys, and I think that's what Biggio is going to be, give a little pop with the bat as well. Pitching, it's about a B. Slow starts for Breos and Ryu. We knew that would kind of come, but Guzman proved he was a good pickup after Robbie Ray left. Love the rotation right now. They're going to get hot. They're going to be a strong force as the season rolls on and those guys can go longer. Bullpen, question mark. We don't really know a lot right now. There's been a lot of work early with some of these pitchers leaving early in the games, and they've been steady. I'm not sold on this group being the bullpen come playoff time, but Romano, man, he looks like a number one closer for any team, especially a contending team like the Jays. He now has 28 consecutive saves going back to last year. Record, awesome to see. You need that horse at the back of your bullpen.
I think it's actually up to 29 now. That's how good this guy is. 6 on the season, 29 straight, dating back to last year. But Alex Manoah as well, 2-0.
Right.
6 innings pitched on the weekend, 6 strikeouts. He's looked real sharp, thinking back to last season and obviously to start this year. And he's been their most effective starter to this point. And, you know, I'm sure Gausman will get, you know, he's logged some innings so far in his first 2 starts. So that's good. And, you know, hopefully, as we said last week, with, you know, with these pitchers, I think a lot of it has been the shortened spring training and not getting the innings and work under their belt where you're seeing these shorter outings. So a lot to be excited about. And 6 tough games this week in Boston and Houston. So, you know, hoping for another big week.
What a day to be in Hilton Head if you were watching golf or flying a kite, and that will be our T2. Jordan Spieth missed the cut at the Masters and then missed a 1-foot putt on Friday, but was able to pull together 2 outstanding rounds on the weekend and win his 16th tournament as a professional. The leaderboard was stacked coming down to the end as players were trying to deal with heavy winds. Mike, do you believe in the theory, when it's breezy, swing easy?
I always swing easy. That you, when you try to
for couples,
exactly, when you try and smash the ball, 2 things are going to happen. You're probably going to embarrass yourself, and on our age, you're probably going to injure yourself. So what's the point? Swing easy, let it fly. I mean, Jordan Spieth, 66 on Sunday, 4 rounds in the 60s, 2 eagles on the front 9 and a birdie. A solid round. And, you know, he birdies 18 to put himself at 13 under, and he had to wait close to an hour for the rest of the guys behind him to finish. But it was just nuts for me. And I texted you yesterday. You're on the way, or on Sunday, I should say, on the way to the Leaf game. So I didn't want to spoil anything. But the point I was going to make to you then, you know, you had 7 guys at minus 12. When this all finished on Sunday, Harold Varner comes out Saturday, shoots a 63, gets 2 birdies, a bogey on the front, and then he pars, 15 pars in his round, the back 9 all pars. Could not get a birdie to push himself into that group at minus 13. Shane Lowry, another guy. But, you know, to get to the playoff, Cantley gets in there, and it's one and done. Both go in the bunker, and Spieth emerges victorious with a hell of a shot.
I was thinking as I was watching this after I got back from the Leaf game, we literally played the game last week. Would you rather be Bryson DeChambeau or Jordan Spieth? And I picked Bryson because Jordan looked lost at Augusta. His swing routine is ridiculous. And I was like, there's no way this guy's pulling it together ever again. And then Bryson has hand surgery. He's out for at least a month. And Spieth goes on to win $1.4 million. My bad. I think I was wrong on that one. So don't quote me when we play these games. Spieth is 60th in strokes gained putting this weekend, but was able to figure it out. And it was a battle for him. He even said, I can't believe I won the golf tournament without a putter. He just couldn't make any long distance putts, but it didn't matter because his short game was great. You mentioned the bunker shot was awesome. He was in the sixth last group and he had to post that minus 13. He knew it. It's great how these guys know what number they need to get to. He gets to 18, curves that ball in nicely and makes the birdie with the wind coming off the water to know that he's at 13. And now those guys are starting to chase him. The playoff was weird though. I know it was just him and Cantlay, former Ryder Cup teammates going toe to toe. They both put it in the bunker. You don't see that a lot. When the first guy goes in, which was Spieth, you think maybe Cantlay, you know what, maybe I need a little extra club, go long, figure out a way to at least get a par here. And he puts it even worse in the bunker. Cantlay gets the fried egg, which every golfer hates. Spieth didn't have an easy one either. He had 1 foot in, 1 foot out of the bunker, but he is just so clutch from the sand. We've seen it in the past, getting it close enough for a tap in. Great way to end the tournament. Happy that those two guys were at least up there. And I want Spieth. I said this before. Masters winners. I want these guys to continue to keep winning so that they really build on that history and legacy that they have. And hopefully Spieth gets it right this summer.
Yeah, he earned a jacket a week later. It may not be the nice green, but it's a pretty nice plaid jacket. And $1.4 million, that's nothing to sniff at. But the one thing I liked about Spieth, he finished his round and the cameras were following him. And there's a group of kids there waiting for autographs. And he told them, just, I promise you, I'm coming back. I don't know if I'm going to have to play in the playoff or what's going to happen, but I promise I'll be back. And I was like, you know what? That's good. You know, that's what you like to see, especially with the kids looking up to a younger guy like Jordan, who has been very successful in his career. I thought that was really cool, and I'm pretty sure he probably headed back there after winning in the playoffs. So
he did. I saw him go back with the jacket and the trophy.
Good
sign. Couple other names I wanted to call out, Mike. Straka.
Yeah.
I like this big guy. He looks like the type of guy that if you shook his hand, he would just crush your hand. He is that big, got huge mitts. He slammed a birdie putt in on 13. He looked to have a chance to join Spieth at minus 13 coming on to 18, but his second shot just went over the red line. And he was still able to play it, but there was no way he could kind of get it up and down for that par. He ended up bogeying it, finished minus 12th. He was kicking himself, walking off the green. Cantlay, we mentioned him in the playoff. He's Ryder Cup got teammates with Spieth and Scheffler. He's kind of in that group with those guys. But for whatever reason, he's just been a guy that hasn't been able to get it together yet to really go on a massive run and win a bunch. He's won in the past, but he hasn't been able to get that major. And I just hope it's not a case of things slipping away from him. He did have a chance to win it on 18, but he was just too firm with his birdie putt, which obviously forced the playoff, and we know what happened there. The last guy I wanted to mention was Shane Lowry. When he won the British Open in 2019, I believe it was, I kind of thought this might just be a flash in the pan for him. One of those European players that's great over there, plays on the Ryder Cup teams, but doesn't have too much success in America. But he's put together a nice little season, T3 at both the Heritage and the Masters, back-to-back weeks. He's got to be one of the favorites going into the British Open. Good friend of mine, a bucket hat wearing type of guy. He actually thinks Lowry's going to win the British Open this year, likes the way St. Andrews sets up for him. But you know what? Lowry had one of these odd situations you don't see very often, which kind of ruined his round and I guess his tournament for him this weekend. It was on a par three, the 12th hole. His second shot, he's chipping onto the green. His second shot goes right across the green and into the water, which allows him to kind of drop almost on the fringe. It's a unique one. Couldn't get it up and down. Ended up double bogeying. Every issue that he had, he just kept compounding the issue. Couldn't get it on the green. Chipped it into the water. Hit it into the woods. Bad chip out. And that ended up costing him because I thought he was one of the favorites to win come Sunday morning.
Yeah, especially he was 3-under on the front nine and birdied 11. And then just kind of, you know, that was the thing I was going to talk to you about. It just seemed like I mentioned, there are so many guys just right there at like minus 11, 12, but nobody other than Cantlay could get over that minus 12 number. And just a weird finish.
Yeah, great course though. Looks awesome. Got to go down there. The wind was causing a lot of problems. Poor caddies trying to figure it out for the guys, but I love seeing that interaction. It's cool to watch. The NBA does the playoffs right, staggering start times to make it a full day event, and that will be our T3. Only a few upsets on opening weekend of the NBA playoffs, but that does not mean it will be a chalk walk to the finals for the top teams. Close games with this intensity was the norm in the first few games, including a heated matchup between the Raptors and 76ers. Mike, the Raptors lost as they kept battling to the end, but a few injuries might cost them in the long run. Do they have a chance?
Yeah, I think it's obviously going to come down to how long they were without Scottie Barnes. Real physical game one. They lose 131-111. You know, Barnes was playing well, 15 points, 10 rebounds, 8 assists before Joel Embiid comes down hard on his foot, his ankle. He's in a boot, ruled out for game two, which goes Monday night. Rookie of the year finalist. They need him back in, obviously. So hopefully, you know, when this series comes back to Toronto midweek, Scottie's back in the lineup. But, you know, some other guys too. Gary Trent was out with illness. Thaddeus Young with his thumb. Doubtful heading into game two. So you got to see. It's, you know, when your big guys are out, it's hard to compete in such a physical series as game one showed.
Yeah, Barnes is out for game two, which is going Monday night. He's in a walking boot. That doesn't look good for the rest of the week. And you mentioned the other two out. That's three big-time players for them that are going to be out for at least game two in Philadelphia. So on the road, that is so tough to win in that environment when you have your full team, let alone missing three players. In the NBA, it's different than some other sports where other players can step up. They may be just as good, but not giving it a chance. NBA is tough. When you're missing three top players on a roster of 10 guys, you don't know who's going out there to play big minutes for you. That's not really going to help. Barnes is the Rookie of the Year candidate, and he's been a key piece of their offense. So without him, the Raptors are going to rely heavily on Van Fleet to score. And as the team, they were only 40% beyond the arc in game one, and they lost the turnover game 8-3. Those things need to be cleaned up. The attention to detail will have to be dead on, or they might prove Shaq right with a quick exit in the first round.
Raptors have lost first round games before, and they bounced back. They battled back. Like I said, we got to see how Scottie makes out here. If they could get him back for game three in Toronto or something, you know, hopefully that getting back home will help.
Yeah. And speaking of close games and losses, we saw game one of the Brooklyn Nets and Boston Celtics. The Boston fans were giving it to Kyrie Irving, their former player, as Boston fans would do with some questionable language, let's call it. And Kyrie was even seen giving fans the middle finger multiple times and even mouthing back to a few of them after the game. Listen, Kyrie is nuts. He's different. But if I'm a Nets fan, who cares? They lost on a last-second spin move layup, and Irving had 39 points, including 6 three-pointers. I'm sure all the Boston fans weren't using the nicest words towards him. And in basketball, the players hear everything because they're so close to the court. The fans are right on top of him. You can hear every word and look the person in the eye while he's saying these things to you. But go ahead and give him the bird. I'm fine with Irving getting back at the fans because he was playing lights out. Wasn't his fault they lost.
Yeah, no, it's that's what makes it fun, right?
Yeah,
as long as nobody's doing anything illegal here, but you know, it adds an element to an already heated rivalry with the storyline. You know, he played two seasons with the Celtics, left, and you know, now they're in the playoffs here again against each other, and it's in any sport you like these little storylines that help progress things regardless of what's happening from the score sheet. So you know what, it adds another, some of these first round matchups may not be as intense, but this one certainly is.
Yeah. And listen, I'm rooting for the Raptors here, okay? I'm pulling for the Raptors. I want them to get through this and move on. But if the Raptors get knocked out, I think I'm a pro Timberwolves guy. I love this team and how they play. They battled to get that seventh spot, and then they partied like rock stars, just kind of like baseball players. You know, they have the champagne parties after clinching the wild card, and they got to go play on one game. It's so stupid, but the Timberwolves did it anyway. Edwards, he's a star, of course. Karl Anthony Towns, he's such a clutch player and the leader on this team. I'm rooting for them to make some noise. They already won game one on the road against Memphis. Good start for an underdog team. Maybe they can be that Cinderella team in the West to push all the way through.
Yeah, it's going to be a good battle down the stretch here between Edwards and Ja Morant. You know, that's going to be fun. And Memphis, I mean, they were in that play-in situation last year, right, where they got in through the playoffs or play-in and then went out round one. So obviously in a much better situation this year, but down 1-0.
Yeah, maybe these play-in teams, they have a little momentum going into the playoffs and, you know, having that high, that feel of the playoff before the actual playoffs start. We've seen it before in the NCAA play-in game. Sometimes those teams can go on a bit of a run because they got that feel. They got the nerves out on Tuesday. So come Thursday at 1, you're ready to roll and you know what it's like.
And just to remember, Milwaukee Bucks up 1-0.
Are we just going to be pro Wisconsin all the time here, Mike? Come on, think outside the box, bud. Come on.
Always.
Now, obviously, 2022 has been an odd year. And the NBA playoffs starting before the NHL playoffs is one of the unique twists. But it allows us to enjoy the races, and in particular, the Western Conference race, which will be our T4. Heading into this week, the two wildcard spots look to be a three-team race between Dallas, Nashville, and Vegas, with Vancouver in a win-every-game mode from here on out. All of these teams had expectations of making the playoffs, with the Golden Knights even going all in on a chance to win a cup. Mike, are any of these teams confident they will lock up a playoff spot?
Well, I mean, four more teams have to get in, so I'm sure we're going to figure it out soon. We got 2 weeks left. Most teams have between, what, 5 and 7 games left. Colorado's wrapped up the Central. Calgary looks as close to wrapping up probably the 2 seed there in the Pacific Division. And then it comes down to the battles, like you said. St. Louis, Minnesota in the Central, they've locked up their spot. They're going to probably be playing each other in the first round. And then it's between Dallas, Nashville, Vegas, and as you said, Vancouver. I think with Vegas, team's been injured all season long. They've been battling through that. 6 games left. You know, some winnable games in there. I think Nashville has a pretty tough schedule down the stretch. Kings have a favorable one. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see here how things shake out over the last 5 games. Dallas playing well right now. 6 wins in their last 10. Oilers are hot. Colorado, St. Louis are hot, but we kind of know where they're going to be. So it's a toss-up right now, Stark.
Yeah, I mean, Vegas finished the week on the outside looking in by 4 points, and they lost to the Oilers on Saturday, as I predicted, getting only 3 of 6 points on their Western Canadian trip. That cost them big time. Leonard looks to be out for a few more games, maybe even to the playoffs if they make it. The Knights made the trades to get Jack Eichel, and he's got 12 goals in 28 games. Captain Mark Stone's been hurt. He's only got 8 goals in 31 games. A lot of injury issues for this team this year. And with so much money up front, their defense has looked kind of easy to beat at times, let's say. And up front, only one player on the team has more than 60 points. Think about that. Auston Matthews almost has 60 goals on the season. Vegas has only been able to have one guy produce more than 60 points. Their last 6 games that Vegas has, 3 of them are against teams outside the playoffs. They also get the struggling Capitals at home. And then they play Dallas, who's one of the teams they're chasing. So now is the time for them to get hot, or they're going to get out of the playoffs. Now, wild card isn't their only option. You kind of mentioned it. They could backdoor their way into the 3rd spot in the Pacific, which is currently being held by LA. If they can sneak in that way, they'd have to play the Oilers in the 1st round, which may be a better matchup than, let's say, Colorado or Calgary. LA, though, has all their remaining games, their last five games against non-playoff teams. But the Kings haven't really shown me too much this year to think they're going to walk away with it. So the Knights got to keep battling still here. They got options. They got a chance. But they got to win. And they got to win, let's call it, five of their last six.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if they get in, no team's going to want to play them. With the guys returning to the lineup, they're going to be a tough out. So we'll see what happens. Kings, yeah. I mean, they got Anaheim a couple times, Chicago, Seattle, Vancouver. So, you know, Vegas does have a game in hand. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, and the two teams in the West wild card, whoever they may be, and let's just say it's Nashville and Dallas right now. These teams don't scare me like, let's say, the East. If it's Washington or Boston, I wouldn't be surprised if either of those teams could go on a run. They're great teams and obviously locked up their spots early. Nashville and Dallas, just, you know, they're teams that are most likely going to get blown out in the first round when they play Colorado or Calgary, who are just on a different level. Nashville, you got Josi. He's a superstar defenseman. He should be nominated for the Hart this year, but they don't really have an offensive star that can score at will like the Avalanche do, and then they'll play them in the first round if they do make the playoffs here. Dallas, no goaltending. And the Flames, they're going to be so aggressive on them that the Stars won't be able to get any scoring chances when they play them. They'll just smother them and finish them off quickly. So to me, it doesn't really matter who the two wildcard teams are in the West, because the top tier teams in the West are just that much better.
Look at Nashville's last six games, okay? They got Calgary twice, at Tampa Bay, Minnesota, at Colorado, and then their last game's at Arizona.
Oh,
that's a tough five, you know. I mean, Calgary's probably locked up too by then. Tampa's trying to catch Toronto. You know, Minnesota's trying to take home ice away from St. Louis there. So teams are playing for something in those games. So, you know, my hope is the Knights get in somehow, but got to win at least probably five of these six, I would think.
Be fun to watch. There are certain words in sports that we cherish as sports fans, words that everyone knows the meaning and significance of them. Perfect is one of them, and that will be our T5. On a meaningless Wednesday afternoon game between the Dodgers and Twins in early April, Clayton Kershaw had a perfect game through seven innings and had thrown just 80 pitches. But to many people's surprise, he did not come out for the eighth inning after manager Davey Roberts pulled him. Mike, simply, was this the right move?
It may be the unpopular one, but it was the right move. Let's look back to last year. Clayton Kershaw was on the injury list with forearm inflammation in July, didn't return until September. Made one start, he was hurt and missed the playoffs. He's been injured in each of the past three seasons. And this Dodgers team is a team that is built to win the World Series. Okay? They're not handing out the World Series trophy in April. I get the perfect game. And it would, as fans, it would have been great to see. There's only been 23 in history. And the last one was King Hernandez almost 10 years ago. But given where we are in the season, given Kershaw's history out of the past couple seasons, it was probably within his best interest and the Dodgers' best interest that he was, you know, pulled from the game and made sure that he's going to have, hopefully, a full season.
There are many reasons to pull him from this game. And you mentioned a few, the short spring training and lack of innings pitched leading up to this game, obviously. Dodgers' expectations for a World Series or bust, as stated by their manager prior to the season. Kershaw being one of their top pitchers and needing him to be healthy come October, which he was not healthy for last year. Kershaw having the elbow issues in the past, now being in his late 30s. Kershaw knowing prior to the game that no matter what, he was coming out after 80 pitches. But he should have kept pitching, and here's why, Mike. Baseball is in a place where they're losing to the NFL and NBA. Baseball used to be the sport in America, everyone's favorite pastime. But something changed over the last 20 years. It could be the work stoppages and the players' greed for more money. It could be the length of the games and the slow pace that doesn't sit well with the younger audience. But for me, what has been lost is the history and magical aspect that baseball had over the rest of pro sports. No other sport had mythical names like Ruth, Garrick, Mantle, Mays, and Jackie Robinson. The Dodgers have had one perfect game in their history, and that was Sandy Koufax in 1965. Fans of the Dodgers from the ages of 70 to 7 were at this game in Minnesota or watching on TV, and most of them, if not all of them, had not seen a Dodgers pitcher throw a perfect game, a special moment in their team's history, and that was ripped away because of caution. Special moments are what make fans stay fans and share memories with kids and grandkids. In 40 years, no one will care if the Dodgers win the World Series and Kershaw pitches game three, winning 5-2, but they would have remembered that Wednesday afternoon in April when he threw a perfect game. Baseball is only hurting themselves with this types of nonsense. Now, Mike, let's go into our golf pick'em. Now, going into the RBC Heritage, I was leading 56-22, and you kept saying, the comeback's coming, the comeback's coming. Well, maybe this was your start, Mike, because I had Justin Thomas, T35, Daniel Berger, T21, and Cameron Smith, who missed the cut, so 0 points for me. You had Lowry, T3, 5 points, Connors, T12 for 1 point, and Simpson, who was T59, but you got some points, Mike. So now I'm leading 56-28, going into the only team event of the year, the Zurich. And I have first pick. We'll be picking full teams. And I'm going to start with people that were actually teammates at some point. I want guys that, you know, hey, maybe they've played together in the past. Maybe there's some sort of connection through it. And I'm going to surprise you by going Euro for the Ryder Cup, and I'll go with Lowry and Poulter.
I'm going to go with the defending champions who are going to be on our beloved Team International this year at the President's Cup, Cam Smith and Mark Leishman.
I like it. I'm going to stick with a couple of young guys, some hot shots coming up, big expectations. I'll go with Hovland and Morikawa.
Keeping with our Euro theme here, I'm going to go with Tommy Fleetwood and Sergio Garcia.
Ooh. You think those guys got a good mix? I think they got some good style. I think they got a chance to make some noise out there.
Comeback's on, Stark.
I'm going to go with a complete long shot, and only because I know these two guys are like best friends. I've heard the stories. I've heard them on podcasts. They play together all the time at their local course in Aiken, South Carolina. And that's Brown and Kisner.
Last pick there. I have a few teams on this list still, but trying to decide who I'm going to go with here. I'm going to go with my last group here, Stark. I'm going to take Bubba Watson and Harold Varner III.
Love it. I liked what Watson did. He was named that he was going to the Saudi League, one of the first four names, and then he just on Twitter released his, here's my schedule for the next 5 months, and none of them included the Saudi tournament. Smart play on his part. It was nice. So that's our golf picks. We're going to have a quick little break. We got a game coming up right after the break that we've played before and that everyone can play along with, so stick around. It's gambling time, a game that started on The Price is Right, but is now on every sports show in the world due to sports gambling becoming more popular than Bob Barker was back in the day. Higher or lower? Mike, what was your favorite game show as a kid growing up?
Game show?
Yep. Were you a Wheel of Fortune guy?
No, probably Price is Right. Whenever I was off sick and I'd stay at my grandparents' house, my grandparents always had the Price is Right on.
I like Price Right. I like Family Feud as well. I could yell out answers the time.
Family Feud's classic.
Yeah. Okay, so higher or lower, very simple game. I'm going to give you a stat, and you're going to tell me, is it going to end higher or is it going to end lower? All right, Mike, and we'll start with number one. Austin Matthews, 63.5 goals.
Going to say lower. Six games left, 58 goals right now, bit of an injury. Lower.
I'm going higher. You mentioned 58 goals, six games left, and only two of them are against bad teams. And we know the Leafs play better against tough teams like Tampa Bay, Florida, and Boston, all three of which they play over the next 2 weeks. There's no more back-to-back games left, which is probably why he sat out on Sunday against the Islanders. I like him to get six in the next six and get him to 64. Number two, Vlad Guerrero Jr., 49.5 home runs on the season.
Higher. He had 48 last year. Provided he, you know, does play 161 games, I guess. But, you know, if he has a couple multi games, he'll certainly hit that. So I'm saying 50 and higher for Vladdy.
I'm saying higher as well. He's in better shape and he looks a lot more focused, as I mentioned earlier. Plus, all his home games will be played in one ballpark this year. The team is stronger offensively, which means pitchers will have to throw to him. And if he gets past, let's say, 30 at the All-Star game, he's going to be focused on Jose Bautista's 54 home run record from 2010. I think he gets over 50 this year. Number three. This is an interesting one. The Edmonton Oilers, 7.5 wins this playoff season.
Saying lower. Right now, against the Kings, you like them to win the first round, but then they'd have to play Calgary, and I don't see them getting past Calgary, so I'll say lower.
Yeah, 7.5 wins. So if it's over, if it's higher, that means you got them going to the conference finals. And I just don't see it happen. I'm going lower as well. They play the Kings or maybe the Knights in the first round, as we talked about. And I do like them to get past either one of those teams. But then they're going to play the in-province rivals of the Flames. And they'll start on the road, which means that Daryl Sutter will get that last change, which is key in playoffs. And in order to go over, they'd have to beat them. I just don't see Sutter letting those two offensive players beat them. The Flames are only going to lose this playoffs to good teams, solid, full teams, not a couple superstars. Lower it is on this one. Number four, Tiger Woods made cuts the remaining three majors, 2.5.
I'm going to say lower, just given the uncertainty that he may not even play in the PGA or the US Open. He did register for the US Open by the deadline. The only one we know for sure is he's playing at the Open Championship at St. Andrews in July. So for that reason, I have to go with the lower.
I'm going lower as well. I honestly don't think he will play at the PGA Championship at Southern Hills. It's in 3 weeks, and he probably feels the PGA is the least important of the majors. You're right. He's committed to the U.S. Open, but who knows if he's even going to go to that. It's at Brookline. And I'm actually worried that with the U.S. Open setups and how they like to have the narrow fairways and high rough, he could struggle there. He's not as strong as he once was. And if his driver's off even just a little bit, he won't be able to make those up and downs to save par. That only leaves the British Open at St. Andrews. Sure, he'll make the cut there. Hey, he might even win it, but I'm still taking lower on the 2.5 made cuts. Number five, a quarterback drafted 4.5 in the first round of the NFL draft. That means fourth overall would be higher.
I can't wait for the draft next week. I've done about 95 mock drafts trying to decide what wide receivers come into Green Bay. Sorry to get off topic there. Lower. I don't see a quarterback being taken in the first four or five picks.
Lower as well. I'm only saying lower because the top four teams, out of the top four teams, only one of them kind of needs a quarterback. Jacksonville's got Lawrence. The Lions got Goff. The Jets have Wilson. That leaves the Texans, but they have so many problems. I don't think a young quarterback like Malik Wills, let's say, will be a good fit. I see Wills going probably six to the Panthers, maybe. So lower for this selection. Last one. The Toronto Blue Jays win total of 99.5.
Higher. I think it's a triple digit one this year, Stark.
Wow. I'm going lower. Only the 1985 Jays won 99 games. Not even the World Series teams had 100. It is tough to do it, especially in one of the top divisions in baseball every year. The Yankees, Rays, and Red Sox will be fighting for a playoff spot this year, along with the Blue Jays, which means games in August and September, they're still going to matter to these teams. 92 wins, let's say, will comfortably get you into the playoffs this year with expanded teams. 95 will probably win the division. So getting to 100 kind of seems unrealistic. Still, World Series winners, though, but I'll go lower than 99.5. Now, each week, Mike and I will give you our best bet of the week to help you make some cash. Mike took the week off to collect his thoughts and his cash. Well, I gave you another winner, the Oilers over the Knights on Saturday, 4-0 to be exact. Mike, I still have the tee, and we'll be handing out another winner today. And here's who I got. This Saturday, April 23rd at 12:30 p.m., mark the start time, the Pittsburgh Penguins will be headed to Detroit to play the Red Wings. The game means nothing for Detroit. The Penguins are still battling for a playoff spot. But as a former University of Windsor student, I know the Red Wings don't play good at home on Saturday afternoon games. Why? Because the boys like to come across the border, across the bridge to Windsor for Friday nights. It's always a good time down on Ouellette Street. Take the Penguins in regulation Saturday over Detroit.
I feel like I won my lock last week as well, because nobody lost money on my account. Coming back after a week off, I'm going with the Vegas Golden Knights to beat the San Jose Sharks on Sunday in regulation as well. Last home game of the regular season for Vegas, and must-win territory.
Might be must-win. Might be. I like it in reg too. That'd be a good one. Finish it off right and get the win. Now, we want to hear from you. Make sure to comment on the pod wherever you download your podcast and let us know your thoughts on Twitter and Instagram. We would love the feedback. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter at JABOPod, thestringer.ca, and find Mike and I on Twitter to see our thoughts on all the sports throughout the week. Please subscribe, like, and rate our show, and do us a favor and tell a friend to listen. As always, clear eyes,
full hearts.
Can't lose.
Oh, yeah.